I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a study that we did looking at a bullying prevention program, and we looked at the cost-benefit, and we did it from the healthcare perspective. I should tell you a little bit about myself. See, as moderator, I know who I am, so you guys all should too. again, my name is Carla Zima. I'm with St. Vincent College, which is a very small institution outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I previously served as a Kerr-White Visiting Scholar with the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and so I've been involved in healthcare quality outcomes and cost-effectiveness research for a number of years now. And it's really been fascinating to me to be able to pull all of those together and apply this to a bullying prevention area. And so this implementation was funded by the Highmark Foundation. Highmark is the Blue Cross Blue Shield affiliate in the Western Pennsylvania area, and through their community involvement, they funded a significant population-based implementation of the OVEIS bullying prevention program in Pennsylvania, and they wanted to really know that age-old question of return on investment, which, of course, everyone in public health wants to know the return on investment. And wearing my cost-effectiveness hat, and I said, well, you know, return on investment, all of those figures, it's just not going to work. It doesn't work in a public health setting. And what you really want to know is really cost-effectiveness or cost-benefit. And so I was brought in to kind of pull together a cost-benefit analysis for them based on this implementation. So part of the objectives were twofold. Number one is to really do the cost-benefit analysis, but also to educate people on why you have to do a cost-benefit analysis for this type of economic evaluation. Again, as the lead for the study, I'm with St. Vincent College. The Winburgh Research Institute, which Winburgh is just east of where I am, east of Pittsburgh, and they are responsible for the OBPP implementation. They work with the PA Department of Education Center for Safe Schools around the implementation. And again, this project was supported by the Highmark Foundation. So a little bit about the OBPP implementation in Pennsylvania. This was implemented in 49 counties in Pennsylvania. It started in 2007. It's about 210,000 students were touched by this implementation, 467 schools, all parents, teachers. It's a very comprehensive, evidence-based bullying prevention program. These citations will tell you a little bit about the implementation itself, the effectiveness that came out of it. But really, I came in again kind of at the tail end and was asked to do a cost-benefit analysis. As an economist, I love this quotation by Milton Friedman of, you know, in public health, we oftentimes want to say it's good to do it because it's the right thing to do. But unfortunately, lots of things that have good intentions often have unintended consequences. And so we really have to be very careful about how we evaluate these. Even the programs that just are right to do, resources are not endless, and so we really need to look at these policies with a fairly open mind in terms of what the evaluation is, but especially from an economic perspective. And so I like to kind of think about comparative effectiveness and cost from this perspective in terms of, it's really easy if you have an intervention that's both more effective and least costly. That would be the lower right quadrant. That's easy to say adopt, right? If you have something that is less effective and more costly, that's really easy to say we don't want this program. And unfortunately, most things lie in the it's more effective, but it's also more costly, or it's less effective, but it's less costly. And so those are the trade-offs that we have to weigh. And so comparative effectiveness, cost-benefit, very useful tools for trying to get at where are you in this quadrant. We looked at bullying prevention from three perspectives. So one, most cost-effectiveness analyses, especially at the public health level, are oftentimes done from a societal perspective. We did the societal one, and of course it says that you save, you know, billions and billions of dollars. We looked at the lifetime impact of decreased social justice system, decreased reliance on social services. And when you look at that over a lifetime, of course, you're going to see a huge benefit. One of the problems that I have with this is that every stakeholder, no one takes ownership of it then. Great, we can save billions of dollars, but it doesn't affect me. So I actually did two partial cost-benefit analysis, one from the healthcare system and one, again, at the request of the Highmark Foundation, because they represent a payer, they wanted to know what's the impact of the healthcare system, and it does have an impact. And so when you frame it from that perspective, it makes the information very, very actionable from that perspective. And then, of course, we also looked at it from a school district's perspective. I'm here to talk about the health model that we did. And all of those are summarized and available in a report that was just released by the Highmark Foundation. So the perspective was, again, the U.S. healthcare system. More specifically, it was from a payer perspective. The time frame was 3 years, and that is the implementation time frame. So the first year of implementation is a baseline year where it doesn't actually touch the students in the first year. That's a year of initial assessment, training that's done. It actually hits the students in what we call year two. These models are more simulation models, and so what it does is it looks at if OBPP were implemented in 49 counties and touched every student, K through 12, so a true population-based implementation of every private and public school in 49 counties, elementary, middle, and high school. So that was the base case population that we used. We used all publicly available data sources, the PA Department of Education for the enrollment numbers of who's in school in those counties. We looked at the national database of OBPP implementation to get national estimates of bullying. We looked specifically at the PA implementation to get the program effectiveness. So we took the program effectiveness that they found in PA and we applied it to this model. We took healthcare costs from the MEPS survey, and then we used published literature, and then you're going to see some things on alcohol and drug treatment, and those came from SAMHSA reports. So again, we start with every student in the 49 counties, K through 12 in Pennsylvania, and we split them into four groups. Ones that have no experience at all with bullying, and then the three others, and these are mutually exclusive groups. So you are either labeled as a bully, you are someone who gets bullied, or you are what we call a bully victim, and that is someone who simultaneously bullies and is a victim. And they show, it's a smaller subgroup, but the health consequences are much greater when you're both a bully and a victim. And so for each of the three bullying groups, we then said, do you have health-related consequences? And I'll go through those, what those are in a moment. So a subset of each of those bullying groups, some of them have health-related consequences, some of them don't. And then within the health-related consequences, not all of them will seek treatment. So then we further said, will you seek treatment, will you not seek treatment? And so what we really are looking at is, can we reduce utilization by reducing the three groups of bullying, reducing the health-related consequences, therefore reducing utilization through seeking treatment? And so when you look at all the numbers, we're looking at 1.1 million students in that population, and these are the numbers both pre- and post-program implementation, and again, they're based on the number pre-program are based on the national estimates of bullying, the number post-program were based on the actual implementation of this program in those 49 counties, so the subset of that. It was a large population base, but it did not hit every student. As you saw, it was 217 schools, so if we expanded it to every school, those are the numbers that you would see. So then we looked at the implementation cost, again, every school building, K through 12, and so we're looking at $25.8 million over the 3 years. We separated it into year one startup costs because there's a huge investment upfront with all the training materials. We separated year two and year three because we looked at if you really were going to keep this program ongoing, your costs will really only be what they are in years two and years three, which are ongoing surveying, retraining, and things like that, but you wouldn't need that upfront startup cost. So So for the health-related conditions, we looked at mental health disorders, and again, those include things like depression, anxiety. We looked at psychosomatic symptoms that would be sleeplessness. It could be bedwetting for some for younger kids. We separated out headache and abdominal pain separately because the cost of those are generally different depending on, for example, the cost of evaluating a headache, persistent headache coming in, is a lot different than some of the other psychosomatic symptoms. And then we look specifically at alcohol abuse, but alcohol abuse only in the middle school and the high school level. So again, we have prevalence rate from national estimates of studies. We have treatment rates based on epidemiologic studies, and then the cost of treatment from the MEP survey. And so when you look at if we can reduce bullying, again, reduce the health-related consequence, reduce the proportion that seek treatment, these are the savings that you would see. And so when you look at the cost, the overall cost of the program, the savings that you get from reduced utilization, we find that instead of the program costing $23 per student, it would actually only cost you $2 per student. And then out years, in terms of ongoing program maintenance, you'd actually see a benefit of $12.30 per student. For our sensitivity analysis, we looked at variations in program costs, prevalence, rates of bullying, different program effectiveness, we used the low end of program effectiveness and the high end based on the variation that we actually saw among the different schools, and we looked at differences in the condition prevalence rates, the treatment rates, and the costs of the conditions themselves. And again, significant reductions, because we were starting about a cost of $23 per student, and even when you vary those, at most, we're still seeing a minimal cost of $8 per student, and that's a population-based estimate of it. And so again, our goal in this was to say that a huge population-based OBPP implementation is cost-effective from the healthcare perspective. When you get it down to $2 per student, that certainly is a very feasible investment to make. And so we use this as a call to action among the stakeholders. What we found on the school district side, that is, if you prevent two students from transferring or going into a charter school, a cyber school, you would actually recoup the cost of the implementation at most schools. And so what we did is we put these together and said, if you came up with a model with a shared cost between community health providers, school districts, that it would be a high cost benefit for all of those stakeholders involved. So with that, I will questions. Yes, ma'am.
Just wondering if it's published.
We are working on it. The problem is that it doesn't have a home anywhere. So we've tried some health journals, and people have said, this is really a school district. You're talking about school district ones. You got to go to school education. The education journals say, well, this is a healthcare issue. You got to go to the healthcare journal. So we are trying to hit some of the social science youth ones. But it's a topic that's very, very important. But again, the ownership is a big issue. We're trying. The easiest way to get the findings right now is the Highmark report, but it doesn't have, obviously, some of the technical detail in it.
Well, Green Bay has quite recently completed an education program in which we had public health economics, and we looked at, cost of kidney transplant, which to me is not public health economics.
Right, and so again, some of these, it's not rocket science. I mean, you can do this in Excel. It's really just framing this from the perspective that makes sense to the stakeholders that you have. Bringing cost effectiveness to a group that isn't familiar with it, a lot of people don't understand the nature of what the simulation is, things like that. But We're hoping. Actually, there's a book coming out through APHA on bullying prevention, and I wrote the chapter on how to design the cost effectiveness, and it kind of walks you through some of the decision points and the steps and how to approach it from a public health perspective. So I think it is in the editor's hands, so we're hoping early next year. So, excellent. Yes. Yes. So, no. I always say that when people ask me what I do, it's kind of like when you're in public health. How do you explain public health to someone? Well, even broader than that. So I do research in quality and outcomes and public health and bullying prevention and pharmaceutical stuff. And so we're doing one looking at patient-centered medical home, and we're looking at a particular medical home that used lean implementation and lean factors to look at downstream if they could set up and improve the efficiency of the medical home. And so we're in the process of doing one on that now. So it's a very useful tool. It's a different one. Yep. So a lot going on with medical home right now, and ACOs and shared savings and things. So. Yeah, so again, part of what is really driving a lot of the cost effectiveness is that you see all of these health-related consequences of it. And if you think about it from a provider's perspective, that's a child coming in and they're searching for a clinical component of it. And really, one of the things that we are talking about is how do you create a screening tool or questions? How do we take how we identify bullying and from a school perspective and put that in the hands of clinicians so that they know, you know what, I don't need to send this patient with persistent headache for an MRI. I need to send them to someone that can really evaluate and help them kind of talk through some of these larger issues that oftentimes clinicians feel are out of their reach, but yet causing so many downstream health problems. So. It is. It's fascinating. And what's even more is there's not a lot of studies out there that looks at alcohol abuse in those populations. But when you do, the percentage is just overwhelming. So. Any other questions? Great. Well, you must be Ryan. I was saying I had the same problem. I'm staying on the other side of the parade route. So it took quite a while to get here.